タラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタタララタラタラタラタタ。
Hello and welcome. I'm Caroline.
And I'm Helen.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
This week we are chatting with sewing legend Linda Lee, the founder of the Sewing Workshop and the Sew Confident online learning series. Linda chats with us about getting the right fit for our garments. How do we know when we need an adjustment? How do we take measurements on our own? Linda's got us covered.
She's going to make you so confident to sew your own wardrobe. Thanks to Buffy for supporting Love to Sew. Buffy makes bedding that is super comfortable and super sustainable. Their ultra-breathable eucalyptus fabric keeps you at the perfect temperature while you sleep so you feel cozy without overheating.
For $20 off your Buffy comforter, visit buffy.co and enter the promo code Love to Sew. That's buffy.co, promo code Love to Sew. Thank you to Grammarly for supporting Love to Sew. Grammarly is a communication tool that helps people improve their writing to be mistake-free, clear, and effective.
Start writing confidently by going to grammarly.com/love to sew to get 20% off a Grammarly premium account today. That's grammarly.com/love to sew for 20% off a premium account. And now, on to the show.
Hello, Linda. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
We can't wait to chat with you today, but to start us off, can you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
I sure can. My name is Linda Lee, and I'm the owner of The Sewing Workshop, which is a business that's located in Topeka, Kansas. And we do all kinds of things, from primarily a pattern design company to we sell fabrics online. We sell a lot of kits where we're combining our patterns and fabrics. We do events all over the country, including in our hometown and across the pond as well. And we do tutorials, is a year-long program called Sew Confident. So we're pretty broad in what we do.
Awesome. And we can't wait to dive into everything that you have going on. But first, we always ask our guests to tell us their sewing story. So can you tell us how and when you learned to sew?
Well, I learned to sew when I was about 3 years old, of course, with the little doll clothes. But I suppose the launching moment was for me in sixth grade when I decided to make little felt beanie hats in blue and white with P on it for Polk School. And I made 100 of them, sold them for $1 each, and got my first $100 to buy more fabric to make skirts and sold those. And one thing led to another. And here I am now in the retail business selling fabric and sewing. And I suppose that's what launched me, sixth grade.
Wow. You're so casual about it. Just 100 hats, no big deal.
Well, I wouldn't do that now, I can tell you that.
It sounds like you were an entrepreneur from quite a young age.
Well, I have been. I was an interior designer. That's actually my degree out of college, and spent 20, 30 years as an interior designer with my own firm, Linda Lee Design Associates. So I've always worked for myself. I think I would make a terrible employee. I'm much better off as a boss.
We feel the same way. We're both business owners, yeah. And we love it. So that's so interesting that you started off as an interior designer. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about your journey of how you got started in the sewing world and how you decided to move from interior design into, you know, sewing and making.
I had always been a sewer, even when I was practicing interior design. And living in the middle of the country in the United States, in Topeka, there was a lack of great fabric. So I actually hired a woman who I had read about in Sew News magazine, who said that she knew how to train people to buy fabric from the jobbers and brokers in New York and would help people set up a fabric store. So I hired her. She took me to New York and I ran around the garment district buying up great fabrics from the cutting rooms of some of the great designers, and brought it all back to Topeka and started a fabric store. I soon became a Bernina sewing machine dealer after that. And in the process of going to conventions and classes and so forth for Bernina, I met a woman named Sandra Betsina, who was speaking at a convention in Denver. And she told me about a place in San Francisco called the Sewing Workshop, which was a school that was started in 1981 for the hobby sewer. So of course I went out there, took some classes, and you know, when you want something badly enough, you buy it. So I bought the school and, and soon realized very early on that what I thought was going to be just this piece of cake business to operate out of San Francisco was actually very difficult, and that I needed to have a product to drive people from around the world, especially the United States, to San Francisco to take a class one night on a weekend or a whole week, whatever. So I started a pattern collection. And at the time in the late 80s, there were not very many independent pattern companies. In fact, I can name them pretty much on one hand. So we were quite unique at the time. And I ultimately sold the school in the mid-90s, or in the mid-2000s, actually, and brought all of the production of the pattern company back to Topeka, where we've operated ever since. So, you know, I was practicing interior design all along the way, pretty much to support that business, but ultimately was able to leave that design industry and focus full time on the pattern business. And then that has grown into these other facets.
Amazing. And what was it about teaching other people how to sew or helping other people build up their sewing skills that was so exciting to you?
I think one of the things that drove us mostly out in San Francisco was San Francisco sitting in this incredible multicultural area with a definitely an emphasis on Asian design, designers, clothing. And because of the climate, it's like in the morning you have to put on five things, and by the end of the day you have on one. You've stripped out your layers. So it was fun to really follow this, what I thought at the time was very avant-garde way of dressing. So that's where we started in San Francisco, teaching people to not just sew basic sewing skills, but to really think about high-end design and interesting design and what I call architectural design or geometric design. Something more than just sewing a pattern that's a couple of fronts and a back and a couple of sleeves and a collar. Really interesting, oddly shaped patterns so that it made sewing more fun. And I just think that it put me into a category of looking at a facet of design that was just a little bit more unique and special than just off-the-rack clothing. And that was the San Francisco influence. That's what made it fun.
Yeah. And your patterns really are unique. I feel like you do set yourself apart with your avant-garde style in the patterns that you're offering. And your recent pattern release of the Hugo top seems like such a comfortable wardrobe staple. So we're wondering kind of what was it that you were going for when you designed the Hugo top pattern? We're mentioning that because it's the newest one and we think it's really lovely. But tell us a little bit about the design process for your newest pattern.
The Hugo is one of those garments that may look fairly basic from outside looking in, but once you study how that's made, there's a very unique way of forming that button placket and loop and button at the collar and the front. And it's a double layer affair. It actually takes you much longer to do that process of making the neckline beautiful than to make the whole rest of the garment. But I over the years, there are people who want to have what I call epic sewing experiences, and they want to immerse themselves in the sewing of a garment, and they don't care how long it takes them. But I have to say that we've moved a little bit more into a segment of sewing where people want to produce things more quickly, and they want something that doesn't have a real serious fitting issue with it. We also have a lot of customers in Australia and in parts of the country who never wear long sleeves or collars, and they want something around here, we would call it for summer, but we have a huge customer base that wears that kind of clothing all the time. Plus, people like to do a lot of pattern tweaks with their patterns, and the Hugo was something where it could be lengthened easily into a dress or a tunic, have asymmetric hems to it. The sleeves could be altered in some way, either eliminated or added to. So I wanted a simple garment that had a lot of possibilities for change that also fit lots of seasons, lots of body shapes, and was something you could produce in a pretty short amount of time.
It sounds like you put a lot of thought into the design of this pattern. And I wonder what that process looks like for you in terms of when you're doing pattern design. How long does that process take? And what does the kind of testing period look like? And how do you get a pattern out into the world?
That's so interesting that you're asking me that today, because we're beginning to think, we have been thinking more than just this week, but for a couple of months, about what's going to be launched in 2020. And so I went into the, quote, archives, which is my huge basement of clothes that I've gathered from ready-to-wear, from vintage shops, from things that I've sewn from other patterns over the years. And I have thousands of garments in our archives. In addition, I have lots and lots of other patterns that aren't around anymore. And they're in drawers. And so I got out these boxes of patterns to begin to think about what we were going to produce for 2020. So a lot of what goes into it initially is what's missing in our collection at the moment. Have we put out too many jackets and we are lacking some simple tops? Or do we have pants fabrics that needs to be, or pants patterns that need to be updated? Do we have the right leg width that's going on with the trends right now? So I'm not only looking at sort of our collection over a period of years, but I'm looking at what's happening in trends as well. And I'm just trying to fill in the blanks, so to speak. So for next year, for example, I feel like there's something going on out there with what I'll call statement jackets. Jackets that are really important, not just a moto jacket or a blazer or a loose drapey jacket, but something that is made in a really incredible, printed, wild, pieced, segmented something fabric. And so the first pattern is actually a relaunch of a pattern that we had about 30 years ago that at the time was probably too avant-garde and a little bit ahead of its time. And so 30 years later, I feel like it's coming back around again. So we're starting out with this statement piece that I can talk about underlinings and linings and how to alter the character of a fabric to say you find a fabric that you love, but it's just not quite the right fabric for that jacket. But by underlining it, you can change the character of it and turn it in and to another fabric, type of fabric that works for the garment that you're using. So I'm not just thinking about the styles, but I'm thinking about the learning opportunities that go with it as well. What am I going to teach over the next year that relates to what goes into the design and the making of that pattern? So then once I settle on a collection, and a collection for us is 4 to 6 patterns a year. We're not producing, you know, every month 5 patterns. It's a big commitment. So the first process is to make up a first garment. And then we send it to our grader, who happens to also live in Kansas, about 20 miles away. And she grades that pattern into 6 or 7 sizes from extra small to XXL, comes back to us, and I begin to make up those garments again and start doing the tweaks. Does it need a cuff? Does it need to be lengthened? What's the fit looking like? Is the sleeve just too wrong? Is it too 80s or something? And start to make some changes to that. Once I have determined that I'm on track with the final look of the pattern, then I'm drawing the step outs of each process, each technique for making this garment. And I'm beginning to write the framework for the instructions. At the same time, my associate, Aaron, is computer drafting those things that I'm drawing and turning them into our really fine illustrations. And at the same time, we're choosing what that cover is going to look like and thinking about the appropriate fabrics that we think will work for this garment. So it's a whole work between the two of us in our office that takes 2 or 3 months really to produce a single pattern. Once everything's all done, then we send it off to be printed. We're one of the only pattern companies left, actually, that's still printing on tissue paper, which I really prefer myself. Maybe that's my age group. I'm not sure. People your age aren't so picky about that anymore, but I really like that for various reasons. And so the process of illustrating it, our illustrator is in New York for the fashion illustration, but everything else we do in-house then from from then on out until the printing process.
It's so wonderful to hear about the whole process. And I really appreciate the attention to detail, especially with your teaching and your support of your patterns after the fact. And I'm wondering if you can tell our listeners a little bit more about where they can find the tutorials that you talked about doing to support your patterns and where they can get that extra content, where they can learn from you.
There are several ways, really. We have a program called Sew Confident. We used to call it Sew Confident Class in a Flash because we used to provide it on a flash drive, but now everything is done within our own website and in your own account. But as I am producing patterns, then I am, as I said, thinking about what those learning opportunities are with it. And so I write a series of tutorials that are in a PDF form. And you can read it, follow along page by page, print it out as a PDF, make a book out of it if you want to, which is what a lot of people do. But I'm highlighting the various steps of the making of a garment that are kind of signature to us. We have unique ways of doing corners. We have unique ways of making doing a hem using special materials to maybe glue it down first. So anything that I think requires some special attention to detail to produce a more professional look, I'm going to bring out and feature in a tutorial for Sew Confident. Now, Sew Confident is a yearly paid subscription, and the price varies whether you want to include the patterns or not. If you're interested in just sort of seeing what we're all about and not having to pay anything at this point, we have a really great blog where we do some what we'll call sew-alongs. And we'll take a garment from start to finish and actually photograph the processes, and you can see that. Or we'll pull out again a signature technique and just highlight that. Someone can come to Topeka and take a 3 or 4 day sit down workshop. Sometimes we'll highlight a specific garment and you can come and make that and get special fitting help and technical help. Or you can come and work on anything that you want to work on, and we help you along the way. We only take 10 to 12 people at a time, and I have 4 people working with them, so you get a lot of hands-on attention, and you're not sitting around waiting for a teacher to get back to you. It's pretty intense. So there are several ways to get connected with us. And of course, through Instagram and Facebook and all of the social media pieces, you know, we try to put some shorter tips and tricks out there as well along the way.
Wow. I mean, what strikes me when you're talking about all this is it sounds like it's a pretty small operation. Like it's yourself and your associate you mentioned, but you yourself are doing a lot of the illustrations for the patterns and you yourself are teaching the classes. Is that correct?
That's true. I actually have 3 other employees. Betsy, who is our in charge completely of marketing, Aaron, who's pattern production, and Pat, who's the office manager. So it really is just the 4 of us. Now, I have some other people sort of in my hip pocket who really help me out. A former employee who's since retired, Kathy, who is at home now, except she is working for us in a way in that she produces very special, almost art-to-wear type pieces, or she'll take one of our patterns and do something special to it and give us a whole new look. So she's out there working for us as well. But you're right, we're very thin, but we have it pretty streamlined. We've been out this 35 years or so and have it pretty much down, but you're right. Multitask.
I mean, just listening to you talk about your operation is filling me with a sense of confidence. So I really appreciate that. It's really wonderful to hear about. So thank you for sharing.
Well, I think that anytime that you own your own business or are in an industry like we are, you have to have a lot of
gumption.
You have to stay with it through all the highs and lows, and sometimes the lows outweigh the highs, but you just get it out and wait. It works out if you work hard.
So we really do want to dive into fitting in this episode because we get a lot of questions from our listeners on fitting and how to create a better fit when it comes to me-made garments. And we know you have a class on Blueprint called Fitting Solo. So can you chat with us a little bit about that class and kind of what it covers?
Yes, that's probably one of my favorite classes on Blueprint. You know, most of us are sitting out in the middle of nowhere with no one to help us. We don't have access to classes. We don't have that person in our in our studio who is able to evaluate how things are working. So we're at the mercy of our own devices. And I've signed up for a lot of fitting programs, fitting software programs and so forth, where you take 55, 65 measurements and try to make sense of that and put it into a program and something spits out that's supposed to fit you. The fact is, there really are only a few measurements that a person can take on their own by themselves with no one else. And that's really under about 15 measurements, mostly because you just can't reach those places by yourself. So this class was designed to deal with just the things that you could do by yourself and have some success. So the whole one whole lesson is just all about how to measure yourself, because, you know, frankly, I can't tell you how many times I've asked someone, well, what's your best measurement? And they say, well, I think it's sort of this, and then we measure it and it's not sort of that at all. And so people don't want to know their measurements, but the fact is, as a sewer, you really do have to know your measurements and be realistic about it. All right, so you know your measurements. Well, what do you do with them? So then you have to measure the pattern. Well, where do you measure the pattern? You know, do you have to know where your bust is, for example, on a top pattern so that you can define where that is, and then you know where to measure the circumference of the bust. So there's a whole measurement chart that goes along with this class that is a progression of building from body measurements to pattern measurements to the difference between those two, to understanding the whole idea of ease, which is like a whole class in itself. And then by the end, you know what to do to a simple pattern. Now, I'm not talking about these real oddball patterns that have odd shapes to them. This is, you know, fairly basic, a simple top, simple pants, skirt, dress, blouse, so forth. So it's how to measure, how to measure the pattern and where, how to evaluate what kind of ease you like, whether you are comfortable with a lot of ease or you like less. Most of that can be determined by what you have in your closet and the things that you put on day to day, and actually measuring some of the garments that you have in your own closet. And then simple, basic pattern alterations to make sure that at least a muslin or a first garment is going to go around you. Now, it may not have the innuendos and the tweaks that really make it sing, but there's going to be enough fabric to go around you. It's so discouraging, of course, to buy great fabric, do a few or not do any pattern alterations or a few of them, and then you try it on and, of course, it doesn't even fit you to begin with. So this gets you at least into the category of something that you can work with. And that's the premise of that class.
Sounds really wonderful. I think especially for our beginner listeners, we always try to encourage them to make that muslin. It's an easy step to skip in the process. It can be tempting. Absolutely. But you're right. They do end up sometimes with ill-fitting garments, and then it's just really disappointing and discouraging, and they don't want to continue on.
And I think this whole idea of fit has gotten really blurred, because I see garments on the rack that people are buying and wearing, and I don't know whether they're comfortable or not, but they don't look like they are. And so I think people, once they know if something feels right on them, then they know what fit is. But for so long, people, I think, just don't understand what they like about what and what makes something feel good to them. And so you have to study who you are and what you own and what you want to make and how you live and how you want to move. And you have to think about it. And muslins, I encourage people to make muslins, but I also encourage people to sort of go for it also. You know, sometimes you just get kind of lucky on a quote wearable muslin. You make it in a not the greatest fabric, but you've made it and you probably will wear it. And I know people who have never gotten beyond the muslin stage. That's pretty discouraging. And then, of course, I've known people who've never made a muslin in their life. And so it's kind of a tough balance. But muslins are very telling. And of course, you can't see the back of you. You have to have someone or somehow the ability to at least take a photograph, a quick photo of what you look like in the back, because that's half of the fitting. But muslins are telling in that there's usually some sort of wrinkle or something that some strain area. Wrinkles point to a problem, whether it's at the top of the wrinkle or the bottom of the wrinkle, and that'll tell you where there's something going wrong. And that's how you quote read a muslin, is reading the wrinkles.
And do you recommend that people have some kind of reference guide so they're looking at a wrinkle on their muslin and then what's the next step from there? They see the wrinkle, but they don't know what it means.
Well, that's true. In the solo fitting class, I deal a lot with fitting shoulders because I think a lot of garments start right there. And so there are some techniques in that class about a narrow shoulder. For instance, if you're large busted, you know, you can know all of the adjustments for, let's say, adding a dart or fitting the bust, but then you get in trouble because you don't know what to do with the shoulders usually. And so this class deals with narrowing the shoulders and forward thrust shoulders and sloping shoulders and rounded backs and those sorts of things. So yes, those wrinkles are being read, so to speak, in that class to point to what to do. That class doesn't deal with every little thing, for sure. There's one book that I own that I think of all the fitting books that I own, it probably is the most universal for most people, and it's called The Perfect Fit. There's no author to it. It's by Creative Publishing, so it's a consortium of authors who contributed to that book. But of the stack of 30 fitting books that I own, that's the one book that has the most post-it notes in it because I refer to that book the most often. So you've got to research a little bit. And to me, that's in print because that's just the easiest access to me. It may be online, maybe not, but I'm a little more prone to research a book than I am to necessarily check out a random sort of YouTube type lesson, but that's just me.
That's great. We'll definitely link that book in the show notes for our listeners.
This episode is brought to you by Buffy. Buffy makes bedding that is super comfortable and super sustainable. Buffy products are made using only renewable and recycled materials. The inside fill of each Buffy comforter is made from 100% recycled water bottles, about 50 bottles in each comforter. They're transformed and given a second life as a super fluffy fiber.
It is so fluffy. We tried our Buffy cloud comforters and they're so soft and cozy without getting too hot. Sam and I both overheat when we sleep, even in the wintertime, and our new Buffy comforter is changing that. We're actually sleeping way better than with our old comforter.
Us too. The Buffy Cloud Comforter is softer than cotton and naturally soothes skin. It's made out of eucalyptus, which uses 10 times less water than cotton to grow and is produced using recycled, earth-friendly solvents. Plus, it's hypoallergenic. Its high thread count shuts out dust, mold, and mites for a healthier sleeping environment.
Buffy offers a free trial so you can try it for yourself. If you don't love it, return it at no cost. For $20 off your Buffy comforter, visit buffy.co and enter the promo code LOVETOSEW. That's buffy.co, promo code LOVETOSEW for $20 off.
I want to go back to taking measurements for a second, because I think it can be really challenging to measure yourself and kind of understand where you need to measure and make sure that you're taking the proper measurements. So do you have any key tips for our listeners that are having to measure themselves solo?
Yes, you start by putting a piece of elastic around your waist. And I like to use a wider elastic than a lot of people do. I like to use the width of elastic that I'm going to use in my pants or my skirt or whatever. So for me, that's 1 inch. And so then I have to go back. There's a tape measure, a very special tape measure that I use that is a little bit hard to find. We sell them, but I think you can find them other places as well. And it has numbers in inches on both sides. So it's not just inches on one side and centimeters on the other side. And it has the number 1 at both ends. So, and it's a very flexible tape. So once I have defined my waist, then I'm going to measure my full bust, waist, high hip, full hip. But the nice thing about this tape measure is, because there's a number 1 at the opposite end, you can have the tape measure around you, and then you can measure where that is. Let's say you're wanting to measure your full hip from your waist. You can have the tape measure around your full hip. You're standing in front of a mirror, maybe at the side, and you get that level, and you're pulling that up and down to make sure that you're getting the fullest part, because for everybody, that can be very high or very low. Who knows? But now you need to know where that is. So let's say it's 7 or 8 or 9 inches below your waist, and you do that with the opposite end of the tape measure. So it's an all-in-one step. Does that make sense? It does that well enough. All right. So you're taking the opposite end of the tape measure to the bottom of that 1-inch elastic. And now you know that at 9 inches down is where I'm the fullest, so that on your pants pattern or skirt pattern, you can actually measure down from the waist, 7, 8, 9 inches. And that's where you're going to measure the pattern to see how much the pattern measures and how much ease is built into that pattern. And you know where you are. So that's one thing that tape measure is really helpful. That book I'm talking about, The Perfect Fit, does go through a whole measuring process of where to measure, as well as the Fitting Solo class, because you're right, it is hard. The hardest measurement to measure, I think, is your upper arm girth. And that's something that we forget about. So many patterns now have really narrow sleeves, and you have to have enough ease in an upper arm, or girth, as I call it. So I have this little trick of putting a little D-ring at one end of this tape measure, and I put it at the 1-inch mark and wrap that around and tape it so it's anchored. And then I can use that D-ring as a little loop. So I put the one end of the tape measure through the D-ring and actually draw it up under my, around my arm. That's the only way you can measure that measurement, is to, because you, otherwise you can't by yourself handle that tape measure just going around your arm. It requires sort of a lasso loop, I'll call it. That's a good little trick.
Yeah, that's really smart. And I like that you're also encouraging people to measure the pattern as well. I think a lot of people measure themselves and then look at the size chart and then just get going. But measuring the pattern is an important part of the process as well.
Well, that's right. You can look at charts on the back of pattern envelopes all day long and still not completely understand what that means. You know, if you're buying a commercial pattern such as Vogue, it's going to say whether it's fitted, semi-fitted, loose fitting, or whatever it is. And they have this chart in there that gives you some sense of how much ease has been planned for that garment. But that's still hard to relate to. I mean, I know that I have to have 4 inches of extra ease in the hips of whatever I have on, whether it's pants or skirt or dress or whatever. That means I'm going to pinch an inch on each side. That's minimum. Otherwise, I can't sit down. Now, if you're a 35-year-old yoga instructor and have no body fat, you might be able to get by with less ease. But if you're someone who's maybe older, a little bit larger, and you have soft tissue in your hips or tummy, that when you sit down, that takes up a lot more space. And you're just amazed at how much space that can take up. So you have to understand that, oh, for me, I've got to have 4 inches. Somebody else has to have 6 inches. Somebody else can get by with 1 inch. That becomes part of that understanding of who you are and how active you are and what you're up to.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, we've both experienced that in our sewing journeys, and I'm sure our listeners have as well, figuring out what kind of ease you prefer in your garments. And then you can even keep track of those things and keep track of your measurements too. And we wanted to ask you, how often do you think a home sewist should measure themselves?
Well, definitely after Christmas and New Year's. And I don't know. I think you know when the clothes that you are wearing are not the same that they were 6 months ago or something. I think you have a general sense. For me, I measure myself at least once a year. But I also know if I've gained some weight and I need to remeasure. So as often as it feels right, and too often is not too much.
It's true. Better to be safe than sorry, right?
That's right. Yeah. As painful as it may be, and nobody wants to do that, I think it's absolutely essential. Otherwise, to me, it's pointless to even sew a garment. If you can't get some fitting going and something that looks really good on you, it's too much work to waste it. So measurements are everything.
Yeah. And do you have any words of encouragement for anyone out there who's recently made a muslin and couldn't quite get it to work, couldn't get the fit figured out, and is just feeling kind of frustrated?
Well, I would probably tell them to move on. You know, sometimes things just aren't meant for us. That's actually a pretty tough question. You know, I want to encourage people to keep trying, but I think that you can overfit. And there is a tendency to overfit when you're working in muslin. And sometimes even muslin doesn't translate all that perfectly to fabric. For instance, I can make, let's say, a pair of pants in let's say a wool crepe versus linen. I can make the same size, a week apart, same technique, same seam allowances, same everything, and those pants will fit and feel different. So there's so much about fabric that makes fitting challenging as well. So to me, if you have fussed with your muslin over and over and over and you are not there yet and you're really discouraged, I probably would move on to another pattern. If you feel like you're in the ballpark, maybe make it in the fabric that you're tending to want and see where you are. Maybe baste it together first without really committing to finishing seams, and try it in real fabric. It may work. You never know.
It does make such a difference. I mean, any jacket made in unbleached cotton muslin is going to look like a lab coat. It's like exactly. Universal.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I think that a muslin is mostly good for the big picture, at least for us as solo people. If you're a couture sewer and you're a dressmaker and you're fitting for somebody else, that's something different. Then you can make the small tweaks, but it's very difficult as a home sewer to really do that. Maybe that's why we're a lot of loose clothing.
This episode is brought to you by Grammarly. Grammarly is a writing assistant that makes you look and sound smarter.
I've used Grammarly for years for spelling and grammar, but I actually feel like I'm learning how to write better now that I'm using the premium features. It can help you stop making email typos on your phone, sound more professional at work, or even polish your resume to get that new job.
The whole Love to Sew team uses Grammarly Premium and loves it. It's so cool that it analyzes your writing not only for correctness, but also for tone and readability. It will tell you if your email comes across as serious or fun. It's so hard to convey tone over email, but Grammarly makes it easy.
They help people show their best selves through writing and are available across platforms including online browser extension, desktop editor, and mobile keyboard checker. You can get it on iOS, Android, Windows, or Mac.
Go to grammarly.com/love to sew to get 20% off your Grammarly premium account today. That's grammarly.com/love to sew for 20% off your Grammarly premium account. Thanks, Grammarly. Oh, I like the advice to move on, because part of it is just evaluating whether or not you like it too. We can get really fixated on fit and trying to make it work for you, but maybe the bottom line is that you're just not really loving it on your body, and that's fine too.
Well, it is fine. And I also say that about fabric. I can love a piece of fabric to death, but it may not be the right fabric for a particular style. I also may not really be able to sew it well. So I always encourage people to cut a small sample, buy an extra quarter of a yard or eighth of a yard or something, and actually work out some of the processes and technical aspects of a pattern before they ever even cut it out. I've walked from a piece of fabric because I couldn't get good top stitching, or it wanted to pucker and I couldn't figure out why, even by changing needles or throat plates or thread or whatever. Sometimes certain fabrics are just not worth sewing up. And it's only fabric, and get rid of it.
Yeah. Are you saying that even Linda Lee can't sew certain fabrics sometimes?
Absolutely. Well, one of the classes I did on Blueprint actually was You Can Sew That, and was all about sewing tricky fabrics. And we're talking about faux leathers and fur and mesh and open weave things and, fuzzy things. Anything that you can buy to make a costume with. That's what I often think about with the new, more novice sewer is, they have access to certain calibers of fabric out there, and they're not prepared to spend a lot of money on fabric yet. And so they're working on perhaps a less expensive sewing machine that maybe hasn't been maintained for a while, and they're working on some fabric that's really odd. And so they're going to have really mixed results. Maybe they get lucky and it's good, but more likely not, it's not so good. And then they're discouraged generally. So I think there are a lot of fabrics out there that just are made for something else and not for garments. So, yeah. But yes, Linda Lee has made, for every five things I make, I probably really love two of them. I'll wear the third one, and the other two, not so much.
Oh, that is good to hear. And what fabric would you recommend for our beginner sewists out there if they're looking for something that's going to get good results and be easy to work with?
The easiest fabrics to work with are woven fabrics, cottons, and linens. fine wools, that sort of thing. I do think, though, that people need to tackle sewing with knits fairly early on. And there's a big difference in knits. If you're buying a very drapey, super stretchy tissue weight jersey versus a more structured interlock, you know, find something that is not going to fight you in the sewing machine, but get familiar with sewing on fabrics that stretch, because that's what we wear. And we don't necessarily always want to have a cotton or linen something. I think rayons are tricky to sew on. I wouldn't start there. So to me, for fashion, I love linen. I love any sort of natural fiber. Now, that's trickier these days because there are so many blends, and I'm not discouraged by that particularly. But when I sew on a great medium weight linen, I know that I'm going to be able to sew things accurately. Things are going to go together well, and I'm going to like the way it looks generally.
Awesome. Those are really, really great tips. I'm also curious in terms of fitting, if there are any other tools that you think are essential for, you know, sewists out there who want to tackle fitting. Are there any kind of tools that you always have on hand in your sewing room?
There are some tools that I really recommend having. In addition to the tape measure I described, I always have a straight, clear ruler that has an 1/8 inch grid on it. I use a see-through ruler, I think it's called, that is 2 inches wide by 18 inches long. It's fairly flexible. I know quilters use a lot of heavier, thicker rulers, but I really prefer something that's a little more flexible and super easy to see through, and the markings are very clear. If I were to recommend one, what I'll call drafting tool, I would recommend a hip curve. And I prefer the ones that are clear rather than metal. The metal ones are, first of all, expensive, but I've gotten so used to being able to see through a clear one that I like the fact that it is plastic. But that gentle curve is one of those universal tools that can be used not just for hips, but for blending a lot of curves. If you're lengthening and shortening a pattern, a blouse, dress, whatever, a skirt, whatever it is, you need to restore curves. That's one of the best curves to use. I also have a French curve. I don't use it as much, but I use it on restoring crotch curves and arms, eyes, and that sort of thing. I wrote an article a while back for Threads Magazine. I can't remember the issue. I could probably find it. But it's called Recording Curves. One of the things that I recommend that a beginner or even advanced sewer not really get into is trying to reshape arms, eyes, and sleeve heads. And so I have this technique where I trace an arm's eye. And then if I'm narrowing a shoulder, for example, I'm just shifting that same curve to a different place. So rather than trying to have all these tools that are trying to redraft, so to speak, I'm trying to use the built-in curves and designs of the pattern that's already there and just replacing them in another place. That's not a tool exactly, but it's a little bit of a tip. So those two tools, the hip curve and the straight edge. I also like to use a very specific red pencil that has an eraser. It's by Prismacolor. It's red. I get it at an art supply store. I don't want to use magic markers and pens and other sorts of permanent markers on my patterns. I want to use something that I can erase, but I can also see it if I need to. So that red pencil, that comes out of my interior design days where I was redlining blueprints, and that was the tool of architects and interior designers, and it's come in handy as a pattern maker. I also use medical exam paper that comes in the roll. I buy it at my local supply house where you rent crutches and buy slings, but you can get it at other places as well. That's my pattern paper. It's sturdy, but it's semi-sheer, and I like that. What I don't recommend using are some of those fibrous-type quasi-fabric paper products. I really want paper that I can tape together and cut apart and retape, and I use a type of tape that's made by Scotch that is removable. So I can tape my tissue, and if I've done something wrong, I can get that tape up and move a piece. So those are my primary tools.
Yeah. And speaking of tissue, I just remembered that I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned tissue earlier and how you like working with tissue patterns and that's your preference. And I'm curious, what are the reasons behind that? What do you love about tissue and why do you love to use it?
The primary reason is I want to be able to see through it so that I can line things up. I can work with the motifs. Let's say I'm working with a print, so that I know exactly where that rose is going to be or that stripe. And it helps me with straight of grain. It helps me with placement of motifs. That's primarily it.
That makes sense. Yeah. And do you ever do tissue fitting where you actually open the tissue up and make adjustments on the tissue and pin it to your body?
Yes. And that's actually a big part of that fitting solo class as well. I forgot to mention that. Sometimes that's all it takes is standing in front of a mirror, putting that center front of a tissue on your body, getting it lined up as best you can on the back, and pinning the shoulder seam, a good portion of the side seam, and see where you are. You can tell a lot about shoulder fit there, whether that seam needs to be moved forward or brought in or something like that. And you can definitely tell if it's going to go around you or not. No matter what you've measured, it's still a good idea to put the tissue up to your body.
So you mentioned some of these tools that you really enjoy using and also choosing fabrics for your patterns. And I know that you do sell some things in your shop. So can you tell us what kinds of products people can buy from you?
We sell a lot of fabric, mostly online, although people are coming into our studio occasionally. And of course, when they come for our workshops, they're here to buy fabric. But I only buy fabric that I think is appropriate to our patterns. And so that puts us into a ready-to-wear type category. We don't do bridal. We don't do children's, that sort of, or home deck, even though I would love to do that. But but no, it's over half of our fabrics are good quality knits of all weights, from very tissue weight to midweight, lightweight pontes, to sweater knits and bulkier novelty knits as well. I'm looking for things that are sort of tried and true on the basic side. I avoid things that I know will pill, so I'm very leery about bamboo and things that have that product in it. We tend, for instance, with ponte knits, for example, we only sell ponte knits that have nylon and rayon and spandex. The polyester ones will pill if you breathe on them. And so we've avoided that. So there's been a sort of process of elimination over the years of what I know really is not going to be successful and what is successful. But I'm looking for great color, looking for, it's funny about knits, actually, the printed knit industry has, in my opinion, sort of dried up. There's a lot of printed knits out there, but they're so few and far between in terms of really great style. They look fairly cheap to me now. So I'm very careful about what kind of prints that we buy in the knit category. So we have great solids of all weights and try to a full range of color. On the woven side, I'm looking for things that just make my heart pitter-patter just a little bit. Of course, I love linen, although that's a hard sell for a lot of people. If you don't like wrinkles, you're not going to like linen. So we have found this wonderful fabric that is now rayon and linen, and it has the properties of linen and that it looks like linen, but it has the drape and care of rayon, and so you don't get quite the same wrinkling pattern, and it's fantastic. We sell a lot of prints, and that has come on the scene in the last couple of years. I would say 5 years ago, the rayon print category was pretty slim, but because of ready-to-wear and because of how we buy fabrics, which is from the ready-to-wear sources, then we're getting a lot more rayon prints. Now, I have a sort of love-hate with those. I love the colors. I love the feel. You know, rayon is, quote, the synthetic silk. That was its original name and why it was produced. It was to be a cheaper knockoff of silk. This is back in the 1800s. And so it does have a silk-like property, but I've never loved the way it wrinkles, and you just have to know that that's what it is. I used to have an aversion to polyester, just sort of, I don't know, just because, I guess. But recently, I have to say, I have seen some of the more beautiful things coming in the area of polyester prints, and particularly in the crepes, fiber that's a little bit crimped. And so it's an easier sew because the fabric will hang together a little bit better as you're sewing it. And it's a beautiful drape. And of course, there's no wrinkling. So we do sell some beautiful fabrics. Oh, I forgot about another one. I sell some beautiful fabrics from a Japanese source because I love what the quilters do. I'm not a quilter, but I love certain quilters who are producing fabric that I think are pretty appropriate for garments. And a lot of them are coming out of Japan. But what we do sell on the knit side that I forgot to mention is an all-American made organic cotton knit from Alabama Channon. And I don't know if you all are familiar with Alabama Channon or not, but it's a company out of Alabama owned by Natalie Channon. And they do beautiful collections of stenciled and hand-stitched knit garments. But we have one of her exclusive purveyors of those fabrics, and they are incredible. If you want a pure American-made organic cotton knit, I highly suggest it. It's incredible.
Oh, that's so wonderful. We actually interviewed Natalie on the podcast a while back. So she got to tell us all about that fabric. So that's great to know that you carry it and that our listeners can get it from you. Do you still do all of your sourcing in the New York Garment District, or have you sort of broadened your network a little bit from there?
I've broadened my network. That New York scene has changed. When I first got into the fabric business, that was almost exclusively what I did. I would go to New York several times a year and buy from the jobbers and brokers who were picking up these odd lots of fabrics. But those people are not around in quite the quantity that they were. So I've had to reach out and find other sources. There's a garment district in Dallas, and we do buy a few pieces out of that industry. Occasionally, I will head to LA. I have to be more careful in LA. I don't think the quality is quite there, but I'll pick up some interesting pieces from some small designers in LA. I now go to Chicago more often than I used to. There's a couple of people there who I buy from, and then I've been buying a lot more fabric from your country of Canada.
We do make great fabric up here.
Yes, exactly. So I'm looking around, and then there are still some contacts out of San Francisco of some interesting designers or former instructors at the sewing workshop who sell me some of their leftover fabrics from some of their collections as well. So I'm just out there all the time, just finding it as best I can.
That's awesome. I'm browsing through your collection right now, and it's fantastic. Highly encourage our listeners to go check it out.
Thank you.
So one of the things that I was thinking about throughout our conversation is it sounds like you've pivoted a lot throughout the years with your business, and you're doing whatever works in the moment and staying on top of what's on trend as far as fashion goes and what's happening in the sewing community. And how do you stay on top of all that and keep going with your business and make changes as necessary?
I'm constantly out there looking at what's happening in ready-to-wear, what's happening in couture, what's happening on the runways, things that are not really accessible to me or the average consumer, but I'm certainly following all the trends that are happening all over the world. I'm particularly interested in European designers for some reason, and particularly out of Germany and UK. I think there's a store in London called Liberty of London, pretty famous store. Most people know about it. And my daughter was living in London for a couple of years going to school. And so I was there a few times, and I loved going to that store because I would see designers there who I had never heard of. And I was able to then come back and follow them in some way, whether it's on Instagram or whatever. So I am looking at the big picture of overall fashion trends, but I learn a lot from actually my hands-on associations with people in classes. I think I have a feel, at least for who my customer is, although that's changing a little bit. But I walk away from my workshops probably learning more than they probably learned from me. I understand now that fit is the number one issue, and a lack of understanding of fabrics is another. I just taught a class up in Michigan a couple weeks ago on, we actually made swatch books of all the fabrics that I consider what's being used in ready-to-wear today. And it was, I don't remember now, it's 45 or so different fabrics, and actually had pieces of them, and they kept samples of them, and they put them in this notebook. And even though there were people in that class who had sewn for 35 years and more, there were fabrics they had never seen, never thought to use, didn't know they could get. And so those two things, I try to learn from my customers of what they know and what they don't know. And I think it helps me. I'm of a certain age where this whole social media thing is still somewhat perplexing. And, you know, it just doesn't come natural for me to want to post anything on anything daily. I'm just not built that way. And so that's why I have Betsy, who is now helping me. But the feedback that we get from our customers through our social media is also a big help. And so I've realized that potential survival of my company depends so much more on being lots more nimble than we used to be. We have to pivot quickly, have to make decisions quickly. And also what I think is a great idea, I can't push it if it's not happening. I have to walk from it. I think I have the most fabulous idea this year and then it's terrible and I'm sorry to give it up, but it has to go away. So I think, I don't know if that answers your question or not. That's kind of hard, but I also am a person, I don't really like to make the same thing twice. And so I don't like to do the same thing twice either. And so I'm pretty easily talked into making changes and trying something new. And I like that. I always have liked trying something new.
Maybe it was because of those 100 hats you made.
Those 100 hats, and I'm an only child. There you go. And I was always given complete freedom to do anything I wanted to do ever.
Well, it's worked out beautifully for you. And we have a lot of listeners out there who want to work in the sewing industry that are really inspired by the guests on our show. And we were wondering if you had any advice for anyone out there who's interested in starting a sewing business or growing their sewing business.
Oh, gosh. I encourage anyone to do that. I think this is the perfect industry to work within, either by yourself or as a small team. It's one of those industries you can do that. The way I started in business is not the way people would do it now, of course. I feel like when I went to my first trade show in, you know, 35 years ago and stood in the booth and sold my first pattern and got the written, not email list, that was before computer, I think, got the mailing list, so to speak, you know, I built my business in a different way. But now it is pretty so much easier, I think, to, if you have something unique and you have a good presence. I've always thought that a requirement in school should be a class on salesmanship. I think that if you can sell yourself, then you can probably sell anything. And that means that you have to put yourself out there, be a little bit vulnerable, and be ready for both good and bad responses from people and not take everything just so awfully personal. And also, I think maybe photography should be a requirement now too. The more beautiful the photography, the more likely someone is to look at something twice. I can look at two pattern covers, let's say, and one is just more beautiful in its presentation, in its packaging, is it drawing, its illustration, whatever, and the other one, not so much. But the one that's not so much might have the better style to it. I'm still probably going to buy the one that's the better packaging, photography, whatever. So those are two things. And start small. I think some people, my daughter and I were talking about this recently, that she tends to want to think too big too early. And I think if you think small early on, it'll happen. And you build as you can.
Those are all great pieces of advice. And you hit the nail on the head with the salesmanship thing, because that is, I think, the biggest struggle is putting yourself out there and being vulnerable. And every business person struggles with that. So it's good to hear. Good to hear your advice on that one. We do want to hear a little bit about your books before we let you go. So can you tell our listeners, I think you have 13 of them. So I don't know if you can succinctly tell us a bit about your books, but what's your books all about?
Well, most of my books, believe it or not, are about home decorating. And my first book was about pillow making. I remember I was working on a television series called Sewing Today out in California. And I went to the trade showrooms in San Francisco with one of the producers of this show. And I was just pointing out all these $400 pillows to this gal and saying, you know, I could make that. I could make that $200 yard trim, blah, blah, blah. She said, well, why don't you write a book? And I went, oh, okay, I guess I will. So that's exactly how I got into the book business, was by accident, by simply saying, I could do that. So most of my books are about pillow making or home deck making, window coverings, bed covers, anything, any soft furnishing actually that can be made. I don't upholster. I will make a slipcover, but I don't upholster. And so my favorite book of all those is called So Sensational Pillows. It's a beautiful book, beautiful photography. The photography was done by my favorite photographer in New York. And the book was designed by my favorite book designer. So I love that book a lot. One of the more interesting books I did was for Vogue Butterick, where I interviewed the various designers that they license. Todd Oldham, Donna Karan, Issey Miyake, those people. And we pulled out a signature garment from their collection. And then I wrote about some of those techniques that would have been in that garment. And that was called Vogue Butterick's Designer Sewing Techniques book. That book is probably out of print. I actually don't really know, but I'm sure you can still get it. And I still think, even though books age a little bit with style and color, that book technically is still one of my favorite books.
Oh, perfect. Well, we'll make sure we link all of those in the show notes and direct our listeners to all the books that you've done, especially people out there who are decorating right now. It sounds like your home decor books would be excellent.
Yeah.
So tell us what's coming up next for you and your business.
Well, we're in the planning stages of our next So Confident tutorial program for 2020. And I do have the lineup of the garments that I'll be introducing. As I said earlier, the statement jacket, there's going to be a great new t-shirt, a nice new pair of pants, and a coat. So I'm in the planning stages of fabrications for all of that. I'm considering tweaking that program in addition to the series of PDF tutorials. There might be some video going along with that. But the big news that's going along with that is all of the fitting techniques that I have done over the last 35 years, whether it's fitting shoulders, fitting the bust, fitting pants, whatever it may be. I'm putting that into a pretty substantial booklet. And if you sign up for the So Confident program 2020, you'll get that booklet at no charge. And that's just pulling everything together that is randomly now in various categories all over my website and the tutorials and so forth, all in one place. And I think it'll be maybe one of my better publications ever. So I'm working on that. I'm knee deep in that. Plus I'm doing a little Christmas sewing, you know?
Yeah. What are you making for your holiday gifts this year?
Well, if I tell you, then they'll know what they're getting, but let's see. No, actually I'm going to be making a velvet shirt, a silk rayon velvet shirt for my daughter. And that's a challenge on a lot of levels. First of all, she doesn't live here, so I have to assume that I know how to fit her from a distance. I'm pretty sure I know what to do about that. But the silk rayon velvet is a whole other ball of wax, you know, and sewing. And the trick about sewing velvet is you don't pin it. You use a temporary spray adhesive to literally glue the seams together before you start. So anyway, that's sort of aside. But I'm making a velvet shirt. And I'm going to be, we have this very popular pant style called the Picasso pants, and they are a little bit fuller and they have this lantern shape that come in at the ankle. It's been our most popular pants pattern for a while now. I'm making a basic pair of black Picasso pants for my daughter and for me. And they're the pants that I'll probably wear twice a week for the next 3 years. Yeah. I also though, I've become very interested in hand sewing again. I grew up kind of as a hand sewer, and I've become very interested in techniques by mostly women out of the UK who are doing small textile collages. And so I've attended a couple of classes in the UK by some of my favorite teachers. So I am making a very dramatic shirt or jacket, basically, where I've used a layer of linen. I've overlaid it with a layer of silk organza and another layer, a partial layer of some silk dupioni. And then I'm using small bits of old kimono fabrics, and I'm hand stitching in very much like Alabama Channon, actually, in a running stitch, appliquing some of these pieces together. And then I'm cutting away the top surfaces of parts and pieces of this garment. So that's sort of a long-term project. I'll probably have it done by Christmas to wear sometime during the holidays. But that's something I work on while I'm watching tennis on TV.
That sounds beautiful. I can't wait to see that one. I hope you share it online.
Oh, I will, I'm sure.
That's awesome. Well, we can't wait to see what you come out with this year, Linda. It was such a pleasure chatting with you. Before we wrap up, can you tell our listeners again where they can find you online?
Yes, you can find me at sewingworkshop.com. That's our website.
Perfect. And also on Instagram, you guys are at Sewing Workshop.
Yes.
I have to plug it for you because I know you won't do it.
That's so great. Well, thank you so much again for coming on the show. It was such a pleasure, Linda.
Thank you. You guys are great. It was really fun. Thanks.
Okay. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. You can find me, Caroline, at blackbirdfabrics.com and Helen at helensclosetpatterns.com.
We're recording today in sunny Vancouver, Canada, and you can get in touch with us and get links for everything we talked about in this episode at lovetosewpodcast.com.
If you're loving the show and want to help us out, you can support us on Patreon. Contribute $5 or more a month and you'll get access to our bonus episode feed. Contribute $10 or more a month and get a 15% discount code for both of our shops and a bonus mini episode. Go to patreon.com/lovetosew for more info.
Thanks to our amazing podcast team, Sam Humphrey and Melanie Brister, and thank you all so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you very much.
Are you imagining some applause?
Yeah. I can
What? It just sounds so different. I miss the dossier, you know?
Yeah.
Dossier.
Dossier. Dossier.